Hey everybody, Rob here, and got two things to tell you before this week's edition of the Love Know-It-Alls with Dr. Mike. The first is that the Love Know-It-Alls features some adult content, and if this is something that is not suitable for wherever you are listening to this car, or is not your cup of tea, then I would suggest perhaps skipping this season finale of the Love Know-It-Alls. So just to put it out there, you've been warned. All right. That being said, this episode of the podcast is sponsored by our friends over at TrueCar. And of course, you'll hear plenty of useful tips on this podcast, but TrueCar's got some tips for you as well, that a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean the interior of your car. Also, removing excess weight from your car will also improve your gas mileage. And also, you can place your keychain remote right underneath your chin to increase your range of that keychain remote, but you still have to get close to open the car door, I guess. But here's another tip that you might not know about. TrueCar can also help you get a used car too. What? Yes, that's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying a new car. With the certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, you can see what other people are paying, so you'll know if you're getting a good deal before you go and buy. You're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with a TrueCar certified dealer. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, check out TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Hey, did you hear Rob and Steven have a new podcast?
Wait, you mean those guys from Know-It-Alls?
Yep, now they're Love Know-It-Alls.
No way.
Yeah, and they need a new theme song.
I'm pretty sure we could take care of that for them.
Let's do it.
The hottest guys around, they're about to break it down, like they scored a million times before.
Oh, wait. I thought I was calling into Loveline?
No.
The Love Know-It-Alls. The Love Know-It-Alls. Steven and Rob will figure out the meaning of love, and there's no doubt they know it all. The Love Know-It-Alls.
Yes, that's right. The Love Know-It-Alls season finale.
Love you, babe.
Thank you, P and Steve. Thank you so much for joining us here. Love Know-It-Alls, number 7, season finale. How are you, Steven Fishback?
Ooh, I'm great. I'm so excited to be here. Our final episode of the season. It's been a wild ride. We've had highs, we've had lows, and now we're bringing it home with, hopefully a great guest.
Yes.
We'll see.
And Steven Fishback coming off a tremendous week, trolling some random person on Instagram. So proud of himself.
Yeah, I made some like stupid remark. You know, one of the contestants for the new season of Survivor said his favorite Survivor was Denise. So I made the obvious stupid joke about, so glad someone loves Denise from China. And then I get this really like lectury response of like, obviously he means Denise from Philippines. This is why you lost twice. And it's like, you didn't need to escalate like that. So I then proceeded to troll him for a couple of days with comments.
Yeah, but, something has gone terribly wrong when the person that was on the show is trolling a random person that's in the comments, but we don't. That's a conversation for another podcast.
I'm trying to find the right way to interact with people who are just like total jerks, and act like if you just respond and you're like, no, you're wrong, you come off like a jerk. So I think you have to troll.
Right. That's when they go low, you go even lower.
Yeah,
that's your motto.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's bring in our guest. Very excited to have this person on the show. I think that he's excited also to be here. From the moment we first said that we were going to do the Love Know-It-Alls, he was high on our list and eager to join us. Please welcome in the great Dr. Mike Zahalski.
What's going on, guys?
Okay. Now,
guys, I got to just say,
yes,
you say you go low, you go, somebody goes low, you go lower. First of all, ignore those jerks. Just ignore them.
Yeah, that's what the sane response would be, right, Dr. Mike?
At the same time, if you, you know, I've learned this the hard way multiple times, that if you hit somebody, if somebody hits you, you have to hit them hard enough that they never get back up. Because if they get back up, if you hit back and, I got them, then they just sit there stewing and they're like, no, like, how am I going to get back at you? And it just progresses and progresses. So if you're actually going to retaliate, retaliate in a way that they can never come back
at you.
So
Steven needs to burn this person so badly that they delete their Instagram.
No, this is why the trolling is the perfect response. It's because you're having fun with it. They don't even necessarily know that they're being ridiculed, but you know that you're ridiculing them. So they're like,
are you having
content in their little
Steven.
Bubble?
Oh, he's having
congratulation.
Steven, and you're not having fun with it. You have fun at the opera. You don't have fun trolling. And like, what do
those are my two great passions is like, 6 hour operas and trolling on Instagram.
I think we need to get you a fleshlight too then.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, hold on.
I need a third passion. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Now, Dr. Mike was scheduled to join us last weekend. We were supposed to do this podcast last weekend and wrap this all up then. And of course, real life got into the way. And Dr. Mike ended up being very affected by the tragedy of the whole Parkland shooting. And I'm not sure if everybody is aware of how close that ended up touching Dr. Mike's life. So, Mike, we haven't really gotten a chance to talk about this. So could you just talk about, where you were and how that all affected you?
Sure. I mean, so my office, my main office is 2 blocks away from the school.
Wow.
And my wife called me. She was told by my oldest daughter, who's in 8th grade, so not at that school, but at a school very close, that there were shot. There was a shooter. There were over 15 people injured. I dropped what I was doing. We locked our office down, and which is good because I guess the shooter supposedly went to the Dunkin' Donuts in my parking lot to afterwards, and I ran to the hospital, operated on one. And, I got to the hospital, went to the head trauma surgeon, was like, hey, like, what can I do to help? He's like, well, look, we're rolling somebody up right now. Come assist me. I took care of her. The next one we worked on, unfortunately, I never even made it to the operating room. Mm-hmm. It was a very hard 24 hours. And then the next day there was shots fired at my school as well. So, or at my kid's school as well. So it was a very hard, I guess you could say, 48 hours when you send your kids to school the next day at a very close school and you promise them they're going to be safe. And unfortunately, they go into lockdown because there's no words.
Yeah.
And I want, like, anybody that's following me on social media, thank you for putting up with me. But I mean, the nice thing that's come out of this is that these kids that are amazing. The ones that I'm sure that died, I'm sure, are amazing as well. I knew a couple of them. But the ones that have made this movement, I'm just so proud of them. Like, Parkland is proud of them. They've have the president changing gun laws, hopefully. We have, you see what's happening with the NRA and all their support, all their groups right now. It's, everybody, believes in the Second Amendment, but, I think in life, in sex, in marriage, in relationships, in work, in everything, there's moderation. And that's all, it's just common sense. It's not common sense gun laws. It's just common sense. I think most people, if they work with common sense all day long, they're going to be just fine. Okay, I've gone off on a tirade. Sorry, guys.
No, that's fine. Dr. Mike, how are your kids doing?
I mean, my kids are now doing okay. I, have I had one of my kids, ask me how to, how to unsee things? Sure. Did he did the principal run at him and be like, get in the room, there's a shooter on campus?
Right.
Yeah. Did one of my kids make a goodbye video? Yeah. How do you deal with that stuff? How do you keep your kids safe? I have no idea anymore. And it's really fresh. Listen, I don't know if this is going to be in the podcast. I don't but it's frustrating. You believe that you want to keep your kids safe. You believe in your government. You believe in your legislature. You believe in the police. You believe in the FBI. And when the media shows that you can't believe in any of these things, what else do you believe in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, you know what I believe in? I believe in Rob has a podcast.
Wow.
Wow.
Don't put that kind of pressure on me, Mike. Don't put that kind of pressure on me. But anyway,
with ultimate power comes ultimate responsibility.
Look, you dealt with some of the worst things that parents can be dealing with. And you're a good man, Dr. Mike, working on those victims.
Well, I mean, I think, can we skip ahead real quick?
Yeah.
And just say, look, this shit sucks, but let's get back to, you know, this, the love know-it-alls, because apparently you guys are love experts.
And yes. Yeah,
how do I become intimate with my loved one now that all this horrible stuff has happened? And I got to tell you, like, I got married on July 4th of 2001 and lived in New York City. And I think we were the second closest hospital to 9/11. And 9/11 comes around 2 months later, and it was really hard, right? Like, it's like, you're supposed to be having sex every night the first year you get married. Stephen, that's something to look forward to. Unless 9/11 happens 2 months into it, you know? And then it's like, well, how do we go back to being a normal married couple? How do we go back to having a normal physical relationship? And I think the physicality in relationships is very, very important. The concept of touch in a relationship is so important. And when you know, but it's different for men. It's different for women. This is not something that you talk about before you get married. And I think it's an interesting question for the love know-it-alls. Like, how do you approach this? How do you approach trying to become intimate again? Because we know that guys have different needs than women, in a situation of trauma and grief and horror.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
Well, I think that it's part of the coping mechanism. Also, I mean, I think that it's not just with a situation like a, you know, national tragedy like you went through here, or, you know, something like a 9/11. But, you know, when somebody and, you know, when my, you know, I lost my dad, you know, 6 mm-hmm. years ago. And, you know, you have a, you know, what, there is a period of how do I go with, okay, I am all, you know, grief struck. And then at what point do things start to slowly return to normalcy? I think it's an issue. And there might be one partner in the relationship that is, you know, more eager to return to normalcy. And the other person is like, what are you talking? How could you try to go back to normal life? How could we go back to enjoying ourselves when this has happened?
You know, I think it's really important to recognize that you should not have survivor guilt. You know, guilt
Steven has
is
a ton of it.
I don't know if I'm going to follow that pun.
Yeah.
Right.
Survivor, I mean, guilt every
you
day.
You should not have grief, survivor guilt, or the inability to, you know, embrace pleasure. Actually, you know, honestly, like, I reached out to my favorite Denise and asked this question to her last night. But that's Denise Stapley.
Not Lunch and, Lady Denise.
No.
And you actually, are you in touch with Denise Stapley?
I mean, she's a sex expert. How could I not be in touch with her?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I assume there's a lot of, I guess there's only two sex experts on Survivor. I guess it does make sense that you guys would be in touch. You're probably about the same age too, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, you guys would be like buddy cops, where it's like, you know, somebody has, you know, an issue and it's like, all right, bring in Denise and Mike. Denise is going to like sit them down and talk to them about their issue. And then Mike's going to figure out the physical problem that they're dealing with.
I love it. Yeah, no, I mean, Denise is great. Denise has called me, you know, called me, and we've spoken about like health related patients, right? Like, I mean, and we'll get into a bunch of these questions that I think a lot of this stuff deals with testosterone levels and estrogen levels. And I, you know, Denise, you know, was able to help me on the psychological aspect of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, I love her. Okay. She's awesome.
All right. Well, let's get into some of these questions. Now, Dr. Mike, you have been married for what? So now six, you're on year 16 of this marriage? 17?
You're trying to get me in trouble.
Yes. What, you don't remember?
No, I'm 16. I got married on July 4th.
Okay.
So we got married on a national holiday. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, my birthday is September 11th. So, you know, because my birthday is September 11th, it's like the worst day in American history. It sort of sucks. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you advise people to get married on a holiday? Do you get a nice break on the hall?
You know, we did, actually. We got married on a Wednesday. You know, we had no money. We were like, I mean, I think I told a comforter story before, like I didn't let my wife, or like I could tell her not to do something, but I discouraged her from getting a comforter because we couldn't afford it. And we, so we had this place booked in Sarasota, Florida, where I grew up, and it closed because of asbestos.
Wow.
And we lived in New York. Like, well, where are we supposed to get married then? And, you know, literally we had like 200 save the date cards in my, like, in my New York apartment. And so we went around the New York area, and there was this one place which was super nice that we were like, you know, clearly we couldn't afford. And they're like, oh, well, we have 2 days left for the next 18 months. One of them is July 4th, and it's a Wednesday, and we'll charge you the Wednesday rate, which is less than a third of the regular rate. But we'll give you the exact same party.
Mm-hmm.
So like, okay. And we took it.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, I still think it was the nicest wedding I've ever been to. Not just because it was mine.
So when America celebrates its independence, you celebrate the end of your independence?
There are always fireworks on my
anniversary. Oh, even better.
Steven, are you getting married on a holiday?
We will be.
You will be getting married on a holiday?
No, it'll be a holiday once we're married on it, right? It'll be our personal holiday. But no.
Okay.
Well, we were very strategic about when
on
we,
a Wednesday?
You know, got to be strategic in all decisions. June 9th is a day that we thought, you know, it's not close
69.
To any holiday. What?
So you get married on 6/9.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about
69!
It. 69! Wow. Great.
So
don't make that toast, Robbie. don't stand up and say that.
Steven,
that's
what I'm going to do at the wedding.
Do you know what the biggest myth about marriage is, Steven?
69.
Maybe. You know, there's somebody by the name of Stephen Fisk that asked me a question.
Okay.
Can we do that question?
Sure. Yeah, sure. You guys. So people Stephen went Fisk. Directly to the source for a question.
Not Fishback. His name is Stephen Fisk.
So someone with the same first name, but a different last name than me.
Exactly. Wow. He was like, he asked, is it okay to masturbate during marriage when you're married? Rob, do you want to handle that one?
It better be.
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is that you and your wife are not going to be in the mood all the time, Stephen Fisk. And, it's just one of those things that, you know, it can happen. I don't know if if it should happen in the same room or while the person's awake or not awake.
It should not.
Probably, you should make sure it doesn't happen, like, on them. Like, you know, there's common decency rules there. But
sure.
It's probably going to happen every now and then.
Yeah. I think that the policy, at least in my house, is a firm don't ask, don't tell policy. I think that my wife doesn't want to know, and I don't want to talk to her about that.
Uh-huh. I like that policy. And I think, you know, I posted actually masturbation statistics. This is actually really funny because we all know on Twitter, like, if you see something, you like it. But so I posted an article on like masturbation statistics for men and women. And I can see that it had the most interactions of anything I've ever posted, but nobody liked it. Like only two people had the courage to like it, but like 300 people clicked on it.
Yeah.
Which is like, everybody wants to know. The big secret's out. Everybody masturbates.
Steve, do you have any thoughts for Stephen Fisk?
I do not.
I look that everybody's not going to be on the same page. And I think that it's probably better that everybody just, does what they need. Now, I think it's a slippery slope. I think that then you can end up getting sort of like disconnected from your partner. I do believe that more so than even like the physical intimacy that's important. I really believe that there is emotional intimacy that is fostered during the physical contact. And I feel like that if you go too long without that, I think that it ends up, fostering problems in the relationship. So I think you need the physical contact, not even so much because of the biological nature, but I think that it's something that really helps, like communion. We are, renewing this emotional bond that we have, Mike.
I agree with that. And I think that sounds like a great thing to tell your wife why you need to have sex with her.
Yes. All the time. Yes. Yes. That's what I write in the cards that I get her also. Yes. All right. Let's get to.
The answer is usually, okay, come on, hurry up.
This is a question that we got from Miranda, and this is not quite a sex question. Miranda wants to know, hi, know-it-alls. I have a Tinder question that has definitely arisen from neuroses about a particular situation, but I think it's relevant to a lot of people. Essentially, my question is whether or not you should ever send a second message if the person doesn't respond to your first message. Will the second message ever catch someone's interest and cause a positive response, or does it come off as desperate? I've been thinking about this because I recently was ignored on Tinder by someone I was very interested in. I'm a 23-year-old woman, and I'm not super active on Tinder at this point, so I don't talk to a lot of people, and I very rarely message someone first. I match with a guy that I met once or twice through mutual friends, but I've never spoken to. I think he's super cute and very talented in our shared field. I was excited to talk to him. I sent him a message. He never responded. Obviously, it's not a big deal, but I fixated and did some Instagram stalking, almost as good as Instagram trolling, I guess, which I recognized was a complete overreaction. I found out that he recently broke up with a long-term partner. I've been thinking about that, and maybe he's still fragile from his breakup, and a second friendly message could actually be nice, but probably he's just not interested, and I've put more mental energy into this than it's worth. So should I send another message? Okay, so somebody did not respond to the first message. You could do this on text, on Tinder, on DM. Do you send a second message, or does it just signal desperation, weakness, any of those negative things, Stephen?
I think both. I think obviously it suggests desperation. Right. I mean, I guess even weakness, just because you are reaching out after having been sort of, you know, not just because you're reaching out after having been not responded to, but you also have nothing to lose by sending a second message. You know, if this guy's not responding to you, he's not really in your life anyway, and you want to give it a second shot and you think that you have something additive to say, go ahead. Like you literally have nothing to lose. I think after two, maybe leave it alone. But, you know, if you want to say something like, hey, just wanted to follow up, I would love to get a drink with you, you know, I think we have a lot in common, I know what we've met, what's the harm? What do you think, Mike?
I mean, here's the thing. I think Rob sort of hit the nail on the head, and so did you, Stephen. You talked about a few different things. One was power, and the other was this could apply to multiple different ways to interact with people. First of all, like, I've never been on Tinder, obviously, but it's my impression that more people have a chance of finding love on The Bachelor than on Tinder. Like, Tinder is like a hookup site. Mm-hmm. It's not like I want to be romantic with somebody and I'm going to go find somebody and get married to them. So, but you're friends with this person. You've talked to them. You've met them. Get their phone number. Text them. Take it off a social media platform. Call them.
I think that's weird, Mike. The escalation. Like, oh, you didn't respond to me on Tinder and now I'm texting you.
No, just call them. Like, dude, what's up? We met at a party. That's how you and I did it. I mean, that's at least how I used to do it.
Yeah, and in fairness, that Dr. Mike, that's still what he does to me. Just call me.
Yeah. Sometimes he doesn't pick up. That's okay.
Doesn't stop him.
And then I call him again and I say, what the fuck?
No, he escalates and he goes to FaceTime.
Wow. He's going to show up at your door next. I don't know. I think that that's a little aggressive for, especially when it's clearly in the context of dating. If to escalate that, I would feel uncomfortable if someone had messaged me on a platform, I didn't respond to them, and then they, you know, escalated into a more intimate platform.
Then the other answer is, Miranda, he doesn't like you. Like, you texted him you Tinder messaged him, he didn't respond, boom, he's not interested. If you see him again, talk to him. But if he then responds after your second time, he's thinking, I'm going to score and then I'm going to dump you because
what? That's not, that doesn't have to be, sorry.
He's in the wrong place at the wrong time or not. At some point you reach out back out to him. He has too much power in that relationship. You know, like he's going to always think he has the power in the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can hear that. I mean, I always think that, you know, the whole point of getting a first date is to get a second date, you know, that that not, you don't, that there are no absolute dynamics that get established out of the gate. But I do hear that, you know, my thought is if you send them a second message, ask for a date, you know, then, you know, for sure, move on. But I do hear the idea that maybe he'll be, you know, he'll have too much power going in.
Are you saying, Stephen, that when you go on a first date with somebody, you don't decide whether or not you actually like them on the first date? Your goal is to get a second date? I mean, when you go on a first date, your goal it should be, do I like this person?
Like, yeah, it's, do I like them enough to like meet them again?
To have a second date with me, not I hope they like me enough to have a second date with me. You see the difference?
I do see the difference, but I think it's both though, right? It's like you're both, you know, do I like this person and do I want to go out with them and do they want to go out with me? You know, but it's not like, are we establishing a pattern of behavior that's going to, you know, end up determining the next 30 years of our life? It's right. You know, at the very beginning, I think it's, you know, every time you meet up with someone that the relationship evolves.
I don't think that there's a scenario here where the guy, you know, really likes the girl and then is just like waiting for like the perfect thing to say, or I just got out of a relationship, so I can't write back to this person. I think that we can say with some certainty that if he really liked Miranda, if he was interested in her, I think he would have responded to her. Is that fair to say?
Who cares if he really likes her? You know, like
if he was interested, he would have responded. I mean, I don't think this is one of these situations where somebody emails me and it just got lost in my email. And then like I got so many emails that I didn't get back to the person. I don't think that that's a situation, unless this guy is like so active on Tinder that he gets so many messages, right?
Right, but these two know each other outside of Tinder. That's what's weird about, why did you approach him on Tinder? Like,
yeah, I don't think it's happening there. That is the move, Stephen, like some sort of a thing like, oh, so I guess you're not interested. Like, is it like something
God, no.
Like
immediately make it passive aggressive?
Yeah, oh, I hate that so much. My least favorite is then when you didn't respond to somebody and they just send you like two or three question marks. I really hate that.
Oh my God, that's the worst.
Stop, I've done that to you, you asshole.
I think you've both done that to me, to be fair.
No, I'll use a lot of punctuation. Maybe it like bled over into another
maybe.
Text.
I'm going to try to be passive aggressive now with you.
Don't. Please don't. I don't respond well to it. Stephen, how about this question from Jasper?
Okay. Jasper wants to know if he can still do coffee dates if he's lactose intolerant. Loving the podcast, you've mentioned a few times on the podcast that going out for coffee may or may not be a good technique to gauge somebody's interest in you. I like the idea, but it couldn't work for me as I don't like coffee and I'm lactose intolerant. So most of the normal alternatives, hot chocolate, iced coffee, are also off the table, so to speak. Is it still worthwhile asking someone to coffee if I won't be having a hot drink, or is that just awkward? And if somebody I'm potentially interested asks me to meet for coffee, how should I respond? Thanks, Jasper.
All right. Dr. Mike, can you coffee dates if you don't like coffee?
I mean, this is an absolutely ridiculous question. I mean, Jasper, come on. So first of all, everybody likes tea. And if you don't tea, we'll learn to like tea. Like tea is just like hot water. Just drink some tea. I mean, I drank like kava, and nobody likes, isn't that what it's called in Fiji? That like dirt drink, kava?
Yeah, yeah. Like from Spy Vanuatu.
Yeah, you suck it up. You're trying to get laid. You drink stuff that you don't like.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless you're from England, then you don't put milk in your tea.
Yeah.
So you're fine. And if you're turning down coffee dates because you don't like milk, I mean, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, how about black coffee?
No, he doesn't like coffee.
He doesn't like it, or he's lactose intolerant?
It's both.
He's got to figure out what he wants more.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's okay to be asexual. It's okay to not want to hook up with somebody, but that's what you're deciding. It's not like, oh, like I won't, you know, like it's just, it's so ridiculous.
Right.
You know, in college we used to say, you ask somebody out for ice cream to be friends, to coffee if you want to get to know them, and for alcohol if you want to get laid.
Yeah. Mike, when you were dating, you would have sat there with a cup of hot sewage, right? If it meant that you were going to get a chance to end up having a successful date.
I mean, is there even a question about that? Sure, absolutely. Yes. I mean, fortunately, I never had to drink a cup of hot sewage.
Yeah, you're doing okay. Yeah. So
hopefully I'm done dating.
Yeah. That's fine.
But I'll tell you, my wife won't listen to my podcasts, which is probably
a good thing. That, trust me on that, Mike.
Can I also comment on one other thing?
Yes.
The lactose intolerance. Oh, and guys, I want to make this clear. What's that, like NSFW, like not suitable for work? Like, this podcast is not suitable for work.
Oh,
but
boy.
I have a really funny lactose intolerance story.
Okay.
So when I was 15, like when somebody I know, I think his name is Dr. Mitch, was 15, he told me that he was spending a lot of time in the bathroom. And his mom was like, Dr. Mitch. To be, I've noticed you're spending a lot of time in the bathroom, Dr. Mitch.
Had your mom just had a helium balloon?
Diarrhea, a lot of diarrhea. And so from the time Dr. Mitch was 15 to the time Dr. Mitch graduated medical school, he drank lactose-free milk. Because his mom was like, oh, you must be lactose intolerant. I'll get you lactose-free milk.
Yes.
Finally, Dr. Mitch was like, I'm cured. I'm cured, Mom.
Yes. So you're saying that Dr. Mitch was spending a lot of time in the bathroom and the diarrhea was his cover story.
I didn't say that. I don't even know who Dr. Mitch is.
You don't even know him. I thought he was a friend of yours.
No. Random question. Yeah. Ask me a question.
Now, Steven, lactose intolerance, is that what happened to you on Survivor?
No. I actually think that was like severe dehydration.
Did you poop your pants on Survivor?
No. And I'm glad you asked that question because it's a misconception. I never pooped my pants. The only reason people think that is because Abby Maria, who is a nasty human being, would say, would call me poopy pants in a confessional because she probably heard it on a cartoon or something. It was like, oh, I am. There's a poopy pants. I mean, she's just okay. Well, let's not talk about Abby. I did have severe gastrointestinal distress, but I successfully removed my pants every time. And actually, it was terrible. I was basically out in the rain in this monsoon. Naked, except no pants were being worn.
Okay. I am sure when you said that, a lot of girls were getting aroused right now, and some guys thinking of you naked in a monsoon.
Not in that moment. No one was getting aroused.
Steven.
Hey, are you poopy pants?
What?
Poopy pants.
Steven.
No, poopy pants.
See, it's just like she's just this like type of person who has like
she's trying to force it.
She's forcing it. Right, exactly. She's got one joke that she heard, and that she's trying to repeat it in like her attempt at being clever. God. But she's, we all love her. God, bless her heart.
Get over it.
I actually think I'd have fun with Abby Maria. I think she'd be hilarious.
Yes.
No, Abby Maria is a charming, wonderful person outside the game. And I will leave it at that.
Okay. All right. Let's give Dr. Mike a question that is something that is a little more native to his field. Brian has a question, and Brian asks about how his boyfriend, he says, my boyfriend has ED, and recently we went to a sex doctor who prescribed him to take half a pill of Cialis, 2.5 milligrams every morning. He's still having trouble getting erections, but is able to keep them for longer. Is there anything else he can do to help with that? Thanks, Brian. Now, Dr. Mike, I didn't even know this was a thing. This is like that the plane can stay up in the air a long time, but it's hard to get it off the ground.
I never knew that was a thing, too. No. Yeah, of course it's a thing. Come on. So I think there are a bunch of questions here in and around the question. First of all, how old are you guys? Does your boyfriend smoke? Like, if you're young, then there's a chance that this is like performance anxiety. And sure, you might need some Cialis. In the young people these days, there's so much internet porn and people like, no, this is not joking. There's so much internet porn and guys masturbate so much that because of that, you show up to have a relationship with your loved one and you can't get it up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that probably once a week. So when you say this guy's having problems getting erections, is it getting erections or is it getting erections with you? And it doesn't really have to do with how hot you are or how, you know, how much foreplay you're doing in those situations. It's literally just, you know, it's like that Something About Mary thing where do you whack off before you go out on a date? This guy's whacking off two or three or four times before he's seeing you that night. And so, of course, he's not going to be able to get it up. And so a little Cialis does help with that, but you just got to stop whacking off so much. The yeah. other thing that happens in these situations with young guys is a lot of them are smoking so much pot these days that there's too much, you know, they're screwing up your hormonal balance and it's, you know, can screw up your erections as well.
Wow, I didn't know that was a thing, Dr. Mike.
It's a thing. And
how much is too much?
Like every day. A lot of guys smoke every day these days.
Every day.
Every day. So one of the questions you ask somebody is, are you getting erections in the morning? Do you wake up with wood? If you're waking up with wood and you're a young guy, well, then your erections are fine. The other thing is that you have a problem with your loved one time, and the next 50 times you go to have sex with them, you're worried about whether – you're not worried about how enjoyable it's going to be, how much fun you're having. You're worried, am I going to be able to perform? So you get whiskey dick one time, and now you're nervous going into it the next time. I usually tell couples to go down on their significant others because of that, because you'll find yourself getting aroused even though nobody's touching you, nobody's doing anything to you, and you realize then, hey, look, it works. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
Okay.
Did that answer the question?
Yeah. We need a lot of follow-ups from Brian.
I thought that Cialis was like a emergency. I don't know, but I thought it was like an emergency thing. Like you took it and then you got immediate results. I'd never heard about it like being, prescribed every day.
Cialis every day usually is for urinary issues. And so it helps blood flowing into the, into your perineum, into your prostate, into your penis. And so if you older guys will take him for the urination, but yes, it also helps with their erections. And that's a Cialis 5 milligrams. The fact that he's on 2.5 milligrams and it is helping, it tells me that it's a younger guy. And, you know, it's just to really get his confidence level up usually is what we prescribe that for. And it's it's more psychological than physical.
It's like Dumbo's feather, basically.
You can also, young guys probably, if they really have a legit physical problem, need to go to the cardiologist to make sure they don't have any underlying heart disease, diabetes, stuff like that.
Okay.
The thing is, I always worry about whether or not Cialis or Viagra, which are some of the most commonly abused drugs in America,
right,
are psychologically and physiologically addictive. This guy, is he going to now think that he's needs 2.5 milligrams Cialis to get an erection? Is it going to be 5 milligrams in 3 years? Is it going to be 20 milligrams in 15 years? And 20 years from now, he's not getting erections anymore because his body built up a tolerance to this drug. And there isn't enough data about that in the medical field. So just buyer beware, so to speak, just use with caution.
That's a slippery slope too, Dr. Mike.
It is. And again, I want to say, it's really the first time I'm not giving medical advice here.
No.
Don't trust anything I say, but trust me.
This is advice from a friendly reality TV person.
Exactly. I can't give advice outside the state of Florida because I don't have a license. Even, I don't know.
We're just talking. Who's giving advice?
You can't cross state lines to give advice.
Well, I don't know, actually. I can't prescribe medicine. I mean, I think I have a license in Massachusetts and in New York as well. But because I trained there.
You were kicked out, huh?
I can't give a prescription to somebody over, I don't think I can give a prescription to somebody in California.
It makes sense.
All right. Our next question comes from Leslie. She is a woman with a question about her boyfriend's ED. Dear Dr. Mike, Stephen, and Rob, I am in a loving and committed relationship with a wonderful man who is 51. I am a 50-year-old woman. When we met 8 years ago, he told me up front that he had ED, but that he took a medication for it. In the beginning, aka the honeymoon period, we had an active sex life. We moved in together after just less than a year of dating. Gradually, the sex part of our life has diminished greatly. We are very affectionate with each other and could never imagine life without him. He is the love of my life, quite simply. I would like to know from Dr. Mike what external causes, other than a man's own body, can contribute to erectile dysfunction. How much do diet, stress, or lack of sleep affect ED? Also, is medication the only solution? Are there any natural supplements that could be recommended? I also would appreciate any recommendation of reading material on the subject that isn't too scientific. I would like to reestablish that one area of our life that had become almost extinct. I have brought up the subject with him before, but I don't want to stress him out and put more pressure on, which I don't think will be a positive contribution to the situation. I want him to know he has my unconditional support. I would appreciate your answering my long question very much. I hope I provided enough detail.
Okay, I'm just going to try to make this fast. This was a very long question. Yes, diet, stress, and lack of sleep can affect your erections. But as we get older, we also get fatter and our testosterone goes down. And so why does our testosterone go down? One of the reasons is because fat converts testosterone to estrogen. And so you need more testosterone in your body. Diet can lower your testosterone. Stress can lower your testosterone. Lack of sleep can lower your testosterone. This guy needs his testosterone checked, but he's also in his 50s with ED. Again, he should go to the cardiologist. But, you know, so in other words, let's say I weigh a size 32 and I go up to 33. My testosterone goes down 10% each waist size that I go up.
Oh, my God.
So, I know. So that's why, and none of us want to be that old fat guy sitting on the couch watching football.
Beachbody on demand. Text Rob to 303030.
That's right. And you'll raise your testosterone. That's why doing exercise raises your testosterone. And you know what? It also makes you better in bed, I think. So because of that,
makes sense.
I would say send your boyfriend in, or your husband, whoever it is right now, send him in, get your testosterone, your free testosterone, and your estradiol levels checked, and make sure that you're good. And, you know, there's a lot of debate about testosterone levels. I mean, we'll take care of him. Tell your doctor to call me if he has a problem.
Mike, is that one of the things that you do? Do you do a testosterone boosting in people? Like, is that something like, because I never know if that is like a medical practice or because I see the, you know, there's like commercials and stuff like that. And I never know what's, you know, snake oil.
Right. And so, you know, I have a really funny story about snake venom, too, but I'm not going to tell it here.
Yeah.
But yes, I do a lot of testosterone replacement. See, what happens is that, believe it or not, it's all connected. The most common cause of male infertility, and I think there's a question about that later, is something called a varicocele. Varicoceles are veins. It's like varicose veins in your legs, but it's veins that accumulate around your testicles in your body.
Oh, no.
And your testicles hang outside your body because they like it colder than the rest of your body, is the easy way to think about this. So if blood is pooling around your testicles, that's body temperature, it raises the temperature of your testicles and your testicles don't work as well. So it makes sperm not as well and it makes testosterone not as well. And just like we have more varicose veins in our legs as we get older, just like we get more hemorrhoids when we get older, it's the same thing. You get more veins in your scrotum when you get older around your testicles. Your testosterone levels start going down. So we can fix this. And it's like a normal testosterone can be between 250 and 1100. And it's like, so these guys come to me at 220, but some of them come to me at like 280, but they're police officers. And it's like, dude, clearly when you went into the police academy at 20 years old, your testosterone was probably 900, 1000. Like, so yes, do I replace testosterone? We talk to all of our patients about the risks and benefits and options and dangers, and we give them informed, you know, we inform them of everything. And then we, if they want to try testosterone to see if we can bring their life back to where they want their life to be, absolutely.
All right. Let's take a question. This is from Carolyn. She doesn't know how to tell new partners about an STI. Carolyn says, I am a mid-20s woman. My boyfriend and I split up recently, and I'm looking to get back into casual dating. The problem is that he didn't know he had herpes when we were together, which resulted in me getting herpes from him. I know that herpes is incredibly common, and just to demystify it a bit, I have used protection with every partner I had, including my boyfriend, and still got an STI. It honestly doesn't bug me that much anymore. It's my reality, but now that I'm getting back into dating and putting myself out there, I don't know how and when to bring it up. There's a lot of myths and stigmas out there around STI. For example, being clean versus being unclean. How do I combat these when I'm trying to date? When do I tell the person? How? Help. I thought Dr. Mike would be a good guest for this question. Hope you and the family are well. So Dr. Mike, Stephen and I have talked a lot about for people like, oh, how do I bring this up? How do I bring this up? But I think that this is a particularly tricky question.
Here's the thing. Before you have sex with anybody, you have to assume that they have herpes and warts. HPV, HSV, they're so prevalent out there that just assume everybody has them. And when you go and start hooking up with somebody, you have to say to yourself, is this person worth the risk of getting an STD or an STI?
What's the difference now, between an STD and STI?
I have no fucking idea. So here's the thing. Herpes, they say 1 in 6 people have it, have genital herpes. But 90% of America has oral herpes. And oral herpes can go to the genitals by putting your mouth on somebody else's genitals. And so you say you're using protection, but probably not for oral sex, which is always recommended as well. Mm-hmm. And so you don't know if you have genital herpes on your genitals or oral herpes on your genitals. And if 90% of people have it, then you could be in trouble. Plus, they say like 50% of people that have it and can shed it will never have an outbreak, especially in a moist vagina. I'm sorry about using the word moist. So again, there's always that risk. You know, honestly, like, I don't think you have to, like, we're not talking about HIV here. We're not talking about hepatitis here, things that can kill you. I think that anybody that's sexually active has to understand this risk. And I don't think that you need to tell them before you hook up with them for the first time. I think they should assume it in everybody, that everybody has it. I think everybody needs to assume that. And it just is what it is with these two viruses, unfortunately. But HPV, HSV are so prevalent that I don't think you need to be worried about it. I think worry about whether or not you actually like the person and whether or not you want to hook up with them. And if you want to hook up with them, like, subtly make sure that you're using protection if you care, you know, because I'm more worried about you getting HIV from them than them getting herpes from you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's my personal opinion. The medical answer is yes, inform everybody of every STD or STI that you have, because that's the right thing to do. And that's my official medical answer.
So would you say that the answer is that it doesn't need to come up until you're about to have some sort of sexual activity?
He's saying not even then.
Not even then? You don't even tell the person when there, you know, there's going to be sex involved?
Rob, 1 in 6 people have herpes. Mm-hmm. And 90% of them have it orally. Mm-hmm. Did anybody ever tell you? Did anybody ever say to you, Bob, by the way, I just want you to know that I had a cold sore on my mouth?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's ever told me anything.
Exactly. Nobody tells anybody anything. Why does Carolyn owe it to some random dude?
If somebody asks, she should answer honestly, though.
Sure. Yes. Absolutely. You should answer honestly. But who's asking?
Yeah, I think that's basically...
talk about a buzzkill. Oh, and by the way, have you ever had...
Well, I don't know. When I was... In high school, we were taught that before you have sex with anybody, you have to have an honest conversation about, you know, your medical status.
They were probably just tricking you guys to make sure nobody was having sex. Like, make sure you do this.
People have sex in high school?
Not me, Dr. Mike.
Yeah, you know, I was probably in that category as well. But look at me now.
Yeah, I'm lucky I had it in college. That's another story.
I have no comment.
Yes.
You know, Barry just walked in and gave me that look.
does just a shiver go down Barry's spine every time she sees you with that microphone? What is he saying now?
That's right.
No comment. No comment.
Yes. You know, I have a question.
Yes.
So I have a question from his name is Boston Roger.
Hey.
Boston Roger said that his, you know, asked me, he said, my wife is very upset. Her name is Angela. And I have 4 daughters and I want to know if there's anything I can do to make sure that my next child is a boy.
Yeah.
He's heard of sex selection.
Yes.
And it is true that there is sex selection in IVF, mm-hmm. but I don't recommend it because I think that what you get and you don't get upset.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't think you can force it. I think that if that's specifically what you want and you keep getting the same thing, what's the definition of insanity?
Right. Doing the same thing over and over again and having, you know, thinking you can have a different result.
Yeah, I don't know. So do you ever get those types of questions from people, Dr. Mike?
Yeah,
besides from Roger?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And what do you tell them? You tell them that they have to go through IVF if they...
which is crazy. I mean, what they do is like they, you know, in the IVF clinics, they can like label the DNA to figure out that whether the DNA is like a boy or girl DNA. But the embryos are so small that like that labeling, I'm not convinced that labeling process isn't going to have far-reaching effects, because however you label it is now in your like DNA for the rest of for the baby's entire life.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what do you mean how you label it?
Yeah, I don't know enough about it. Mm-hmm. It just worries me. Don't touch my baby's DNA. I just get worried about manipulating DNA in embryos.
Yeah.
But you must have had patients who have gone through IVF and who've had perfectly healthy children.
Most people have perfectly healthy children going through IVF. But I don't recommend them trying to figure out the sex during the IVF process and only going after one sex.
Right. There's a difference between just fertilizing an egg with whatever, as opposed to trying to, really figure out what's going on and then specifically fertilizing an egg in a certain way.
No, what happens is that it's not the way you fertilize them. You fertilize the eggs. They then, let's say you have like 8 eggs, you take sperm, you have now 8 embryos that you're growing. But an embryo is like 8 cells, 16 cells, like maybe 64 cells. And now you're going to sick those cells, like you look for the healthiest embryo and you pick one, maybe two that you're going to then reimplant into the uterus.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying, in the IVF clinics these days, they can say, well, besides just saying which ones are healthy, we're going to pick the boy ones from the girl ones. And maybe what we'll do is we'll just pinch off one of those 64 cells and look to see whether it's an XY or an XX. But you know what? You're an embryo. Like, leave my cells alone. Just let my embryos grow.
Yeah.
That's my opinion of it.
Okay. I'm going to play a voicemail from one of our listeners who wants to know about staying in a certain dating pool.
Hey, Rob, Steven, and Dr. Mike. My name is AB from New Jersey. I am 23 years old, and I have a question that actually may be tailor-made just for this panel, actually.
Wow.
Or maybe 2 out of 3 of you guys, but I want to hear all of your thoughts. Here's my predicament. I have a little bit of trouble in the dating world, and I think it may be because of the limitations I put on myself. And let me explain to you what I mean. This is a bit controversial, but I'm a Jewish guy. I am not so religious, but my family is. And it's always been a preference of mine to date Jewish women because I want to one day marry a Jewish woman. And the reason for that is I was raised with Jewish holidays, Jewish customs. And though I don't follow all the Jewish customs, it's still near and dear to my heart. And I would like to marry someone who my family can embrace in the Jewish traditions as well. So it makes kind of sense, I think. Dating is difficult for me. Let's just put it like that and simplify it. And I'm starting to think that maybe my issue may be the Jewish rule, to only date Jewish girls, that rule may be holding me back. The thing is, I've had a lot of close friendships with women who are not Jewish, who I know just by instinct that I probably would have a strong relationship with or can have a strong relationship with if I wasn't so stingy on this rule. So I don't know. This is a complicated one. It's also a controversial one. Tell me if I'm being crazy. I don't know. Love you guys and keep up the good work. This podcast series is amazing. I'm a big fan of it.
Oh, thank you.
As a hopeless romantic. Trust me. Trust me. I love this stuff. You guys are doing great. Okay, bye-bye.
So do we catch how old AB is?
He is probably, I think, in his mid-20s.
Okay. Mike, what do you think?
Sorry, I was sleeping. I mean, there are so many questions that this guy brings up.
Yeah.
And listening to this guy. I mean, I think the first question, obviously his question is, do I only have to date Jewish women because I'm Jewish? And I think that we see people like to date within their own culture. And I think one of the reasons is just it's easier.
Yes.
Like in the long run, when you have kids, when you have holidays, when you introduce them to your family, it's definitely easier. But you also have to figure out like, what are you attracted to? I mean, I don't want to get too personal, but Stephen, is your fiance Jewish?
I actually have a slightly long answer to that, which is that she's like me, half Jewish and half Christian. And I, for a lot of years after Survivor, you know, I had a really special relationship on Survivor with someone who was from a very different culture than me. And so afterwards, for a lot of years, I dated people from
JT.
I dated people from dramatically different cultures, thinking like, this is really cool. You know, I can really expand my mind. Like, you know, I don't need to date someone who's like me. And I really found that while there might be a lot of initial interest and passion there, that over time, those fundamental differences about what our expectations were, you know, both from a day and from a lifetime, became dramatic when I started thinking about our ultimate future together. And now my fiance is very much like me. You know, we have very similar backgrounds. Like I said, we share a mixed religious upbringing. And it's great. You know, we both essentially have the same set of expectations for everything. And it really does make it a lot easier. So anyway, that's my long answer to your, you know, short question.
But here's the thing, is it like, see, it's interesting, you know, I'm going to speak as a Jewish man here, I think, because, you know, as I've gotten older, what I've learned is that a lot of people supposedly are told, oh, you should marry a Jewish guy. But Jewish guys are like told to marry Jewish women. But I feel like, and Rob, I bet Stephen would agree with me here. I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay.
That most Jewish guys supposedly have a thing for Asian women.
It's a famous stereotype.
Stephen, what do you think? I mean, I think that's a pretty good stereotype, because I would say that the most interesting podcast that I listened to here was the one with Simone on it, because I think, Stephen, that you and Simone had a thing.
Okay, don't get Stephen in trouble with Steve.
I've never even met Simone.
I think she dug you.
Oh wow.
Well, let's get back to AB here for a second, Dr.
You're going to edit that part out.
No, I'll leave it. I think that's okay. It's just Dr. Mike's opinion. It doesn't mean that it's true. But would you prescribe, Dr. Mike, what about some sort of a other culture Rumspringa for AB, where what if he just allowed himself for a short time, 6 months or a year, just to date women that is outside of that dating pool that he has sort of closed himself off to see, oh, I actually, this is a lot different than what I thought of. Like, no, I think that I realized how important that was to me. Like Stephen Fishback did.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, like, you haven't dated somebody in 2 years now. Like, that's ridiculous. You need, like, use it or lose it, right? Like, go get on the dating scene.
Will that happen?
And stop looking. Otherwise, you're coming off to the Jewish women also, like, as this dude that hasn't dated somebody for 2 years. And so it's like, but you want to come off, like, it's all how you portray yourself. Like, you want to walk into a room and look like, you know, portray yourself like Cole, right? Like, oh, look at me, I'm Cole. Like, you want to be the lion. You know, and that's how you want people to see you when you walk into a room. And when you haven't dated somebody in a year and a half, 2 years, like, they're not seeing you that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so date the other women. It's going to make you more attractive for the Jewish women.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. And eventually you fall in love with who you fall in love with. Don't like, and you make it work. There are so many problems in life and so many hardships in life. Just enjoy your life and fall in love with who you want to fall in love with.
That sounds pretty good advice. All right. Our next question comes from Phil, who is concerned with a scar in his nether regions. Here's my problem. I'm a single male in my 40s. In 2016, I had groin hernia surgery. My doctor said it was okay to resume sex after a few weeks. But after 18 months, I haven't even been on a date because I worry about what will happen if I bring a woman home for lovemaking. I don't want to show a foxy lady a big ugly scar when I drop trow. And I worry about the inevitable groin tuchus, collisions of sexy time. As a result, I've had to rely on the types of toys Dr. Mike requests for his birthday and my palms. Even if that helps my prostate, I'd still like to also get my courage to get back on the dating market. Actual women cuddle, snuggle, and kiss, too. And I miss that so much. What advice do you have for a person who lost his sexual mojo to surgery? Signed, Freezing Up in Chicago. P.S. If your answers work, I will buy Dr. Mike a birthday present he will like using the Amazon link on robhasawebsite.
Wow. Okay, Dr. Mike. This
is a lot of pressure here. This is very exciting. Hold on. Rob, do you have a link to the Fleshlight on your website now?
I don't have a link. That if you can buy it on Amazon, you can use our associate link and go ahead and buy yourself whatever you want. But no, we do not have a direct deal.
I can go to your website and buy stuff.
There's like
and you
the
make
whole,
money on
like Rob has a porn site though, like the hidden links on your website.
Yeah, that's
you gotta
very
find the hidden links
that's
to go
that's
to the porn.
This is the dark web.
Yes. Yeah. So you could buy whatever you'd like on Amazon.
So, I mean, let me answer this. First of all, a hernia scar should, if you grow a little pubic hair, becomes unnoticeable. But, you know, and people like under the age of 35, I think everybody shaves everything. And so.
Really?
Yeah, Steven, it's crazy.
Wow.
It's like, I mean, it also guys? Makes you look bigger. Oh, yeah. Guys are like, I mean, they're like babies.
So you think that freezing in Chicago is going with the hardwood floor, Mike?
I mean, if you're saying, do I think he shaves? Yeah, he must. But you can just get a little bit of carpeting, I guess, and it will hide the scar. Just a little bit. But he's single. And he's probably dating women in their 30s or wants to be. So he wants to sort of look like the men in their 30s. But if, you know, so first of all, second, it's just a scar, man. Like you can like it's not a big deal. Nobody's not like a woman pulls down your pants and she's not going to be like, dude, I'm not hooking up with you because you have a scar there. Maybe it becomes something to talk about. Expect her to run her finger over it. That might be a little cool.
Can I just, who's having sex in these very well-lit rooms?
We don't know how big the scar is.
Yeah, it's called turn off the lights. Nobody has a scar with the lights off, Steven.
That's true. Good point. And then if you really want, like, if you want to make sure, go to like a strip club or something and show a girl your scar and be like, is this upsetting to you?
You can do that? I don't know if that's allowed.
I don't know either.
You know that you strippers are famed for giving you honest opinions.
Well, you don't want an honest opinion here. You want the girl to be like,
I'm pretty sure at the strip club they encourage you to keep your pants on, Dr. Mike. Not that I frequent a lot.
You need to build up your confidence. Again, it's been like a year and a half since you've dated anybody. Like, I'm trying to get somebody to build up his confidence here. Like, it's not about me over the microphone telling you the scar's okay. Come into my office and I'll tell you the scar's okay. Going to anybody's office, they'll tell you the scar's okay. But you want somebody in a sexual situation, even though the lights are going to be off, to tell you the scar's okay, because you need like that nurturing reassurance. And I'm trying to figure out a way that this guy can get that.
Well, that's interesting, Dr. Mike, because I think you get that a lot from guys, right? Where like you get a lot of like aesthetic questions like, is this you think this is OK? Is this what do you think of this? Right.
Everybody's insecure. So the problem with men these days is that they're all insecure about their penises, because it used to be like a girl sees boobs on television shows all the time and knows like all boobs are different, but all boobs basically look the same.
Yeah.
Guys, the only dicks that they see are penises in pornos that they're watching. And these guys have like humongous penises. That's why they're in pornos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so guys all come in. They're nervous. They're like, oh, it got cold. It's cold. Sorry. It's so small. Like, stop apologizing.
They apologize to you.
They're apologizing to you, the doctor?
Yeah, when they pull down their pants. Like, guys are scared to pull down their pants for me. A lot of them. They're nervous.
Do you keep your office at like 86 degrees, Dr. Mike, to make people feel more comfortable?
No, I don't. I don't want them to feel too comfortable.
You keep it at like 52 to mess with them?
I have a lot of women that work in my office.
Yeah.
I don't need them feeling too comfortable. But I mean, I think the thing is, though, is that basically don't worry about your member. It's like, don't worry about what you look down there. Just worry about having fun. If you're having fun, they're having fun.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I really can't imagine that when you're at the point of the underpants coming off, that anyone is going to care about a scar you had from a surgery from many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do care, then get rid of them.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's like I know a girl that worries about was like that. I'm worried because one boob is slightly different than the other boob. And it's like it's the same type of thing. Nobody cares.
No, nobody cares.
Like, nobody cares. one ball is always hangs lower than the other ball.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares. I mean, it's all about, I don't think it's more about how you feel about your vagina than how your partner or somebody else feels about your vagina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, actually, Roger Pistorino just changed his question.
Right.
Rob, I have a question from a guy by the name of Roger Pistorino.
Yes.
He wants to know about pubic hair shaving, and he wants to know if Jacob Derwin has a Jacob Derwin down below or if he shaves.
That's a very specific question.
Yeah. I mean, ask from Roger. And so, yeah. I mean, I don't know. You're going to have to ask Jacob, who we're sure is listening to this podcast because he like does podcasts and they're all obsessed with you guys. But I think most guys under the age of 35 completely shave just like a baby's bottom.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, do you know
with
that
a razor, Dr. Mike?
Well, you know, it's interesting. One wife once called me and was like, my husband, he's bleeding out in his scrotum.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm like, did he shave? She's like, yeah. Like, I'm like, just hold some pressure. It was like midnight on like a Saturday night. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing at midnight on a Saturday night with a razor, like to your balls, you know? Okay. But I think, you know, like it's foreplay. Like I think like.
It's foreplay?
I bet you some couples use it as foreplay.
Mm-hmm.
Guys will use anything as foreplay, Steven. Just get married. You'll know what I'm talking about.
The Edward Scissorhands. Okay.
Wow.
All right.
So Dr. Mitch asked a question.
Yes, Dr. Mitch.
Dr. Mitch has noticed over the
years. I feel
like
years I know Dr. Mitch already.
There's men's clothing that show up in his house, like men's underwear and men's shirts, men's shorts. And his wife tells him that it's his sister-in-law's husband or it's her dad's. But none of them look like things that her sister-in-law or her husband would wear.
They look
like things that like some oddly dressed stranger might wear. Like
pool boy.
But no, the pool boy would dress better. It would be bigger. Like,
is Dr. Mitch worried that his wife is running a laundry out of his house?
Well, do you think Dr. Mitch's wife is cheating on him?
No.
What do you do when you think that your significant other might be cheating on you? I think this is a good question, guys.
That is a good question. That's a really good question.
I mean, do you really not trust them so much that you start like stalking them on Find a Friend, like on the iPhone?
Don't ask a question that you don't want to know. If you want to know if your partner is cheating, then you have to investigate.
No, but if you're seeing signs, right? If Dr. Mitch is seeing these signs, what does he do?
I mean, Dr. Mitch asks, I think the right answer is say, are you cheating on me? Is there something I'm doing wrong? You know,
But no one answers yes. No one is like, I am cheating.
Your significant other, I think you have to believe them. Even if they're lying to you, you just believe them because.
Well, I think there'd be more clues than clothes. I don't think you could just go off of clothes because I could tell you that I got into a fight with my wife at one point in time when she found a pair of women's black underwear in my office at one point and really accused me of infidelity, Dr. Mike. Whose underwear are these? I want to know. I said, look, I don't know. I don't know anything about this. I don't know what you're talking with anything. Nobody's taken off their... And she was angry about it and asked me all these questions for weeks. And then finally, you know, I had confronted her. We were telling this story on a podcast and she's like, I realized that they were mine. She found her own clothes, Dr. Mike.
Yeah, I mean, these clothes are like the size that would fit my wife. I mean, maybe my wife is actually likes cross-dressing and maybe that actually, I mean, Dr. Mitch's wife, that would explain it.
I don't know.
It would be like odd, like we're talking like, you know, short shorts from the 1980s, like boys' short shorts from the 1980s are in my closet sometimes. It's like, whose shorts are these? Like, you know, the ones that somebody would wear in Xanadu, the movie? Like, it's like, a tank top with like, no one would wear this stuff, but it shows up in my drawers. It's weird.
I don't know.
I mean, Dr. Mitch's drawers.
Yeah, Dr. Wow. Mitch, I don't know. If Dr. Mitch is listening, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's having a drink right now with Boston Roger.
Boston Roger.
Who, for the record, I tried like tweeting and He never responded to me, but I didn't send him back ? I just let it go.
Yeah. He's got a lot of people, tweeting at him, I imagine.
Who, Boston Roger?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
they all want to know. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. All right. David has a question. David wants to say, yo, dudes,
yo.
I did not have a question until now. I just got back from a night out at the club, and this girl and I were clicking. This was I had sent out this last night. Hey, last call to get your questions in. So this person came back from the club and wrote this email. We went back to her place and started getting intimate, but as soon as we got undressed, she was very unenthused with seeing an elephant trunk on me. I really was not clear on what this
what does that mean?
emailer was talking about until I read on to that. He goes on to say, I've been with a few different partners.
I think he's just bragging.
And usually not being circumcised is not a problem. But this was the second time that the situation has occurred. Do I need to start letting people know ahead of time about this intimate fact? Do I need to get an adult circumcision? Help me out, love gurus. And I thought it, at first, yeah, David was sort of, this was like a humble brag email, but I think that he is talking about that. He has been with partners who seem to be taken aback that he has a foreskin, Dr. Mike.
I mean, first of all, it's called a sweater vest. It's not called a elephant
trunk. Sorry, I'll use the technical term from now on.
I mean, you're flattering yourself, David. That being said, you're okay. It's okay for you to flatter yourself. I think, you know, if you want a circumcision, get a circumcision. But I don't think you get a circumcision because you're worried about the random person you hook up with in a club. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's just ridiculous. But if you do get a circumcision, rest assured that you will enjoy intercourse the equivalent of before the circumcision.
Okay, you will enjoy it the same. Is what
that true? I had heard that the circumcision decreased your sensitivity.
Different areas of your penis are sensitive in different ways before and after a circumcision. But both before and after circumcision, guys love to have sex.
Well, yes. That seems fair.
Okay, so you will not be diminished. Dr. Wright, do you have strong feelings one way or the other? I know that this is a hot button topic, and I know something that we talked about a lot before my kids were born. What do we do? Do you, as somebody who is very familiar with this part of the anatomy, do you have thoughts on this?
Sure. What I tell people is to do what their dad is. The dad is. So, Rob, if you were circumcised, your kid should be circumcised.
Mm-hmm.
If not, no, because your kids are going to look at your penis and think that's what a normal penis looks like. And so you want them to grow up thinking their penis looks normal.
Yes.
It's about 50-50 in the United States. 50% of people are circumcised and 50% of people are not circumcised.
I'm surprised.
Why?
I don't know. I didn't think it was 50-50.
I thought it was more circumcised than uncircumcised.
Yeah, that's because you live in the Northeast. In the South, it's mainly in the South and the, you know, in central part of the United States, it's the other way around.
Wow. Okay.
To be honest with you, I don't think that you guys and people in Latin America are mostly not circumcised.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know about your sexual preferences or not, but probably you guys are not dick experts like I am.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you are though.
Yeah.
I mean,
no one's a dick expert like you are.
Nobody like you, Dr.
Mike. If you are, Stephen, you should probably tell your fiance.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough. If you were an expert. Okay. So, yeah. I know, but I don't think that David should. You would not recommend that he makes a change unless it's something that bothers him, right?
No. You should surprise him. Surprise!
Yeah. Yeah. So,
it should be flopping around. Come on. Make it fun. Tell them that you're super special.
Right, right. I mean, for me, in terms of what we were talking about with Nicole and I when we had to, you know, make this decision for our kids was that, it does, I had always heard as a, growing up that there were, reasons to do it that were medical reasons and that it was,
Rob, are you circumcised?
I am.
So, just do it,
Yeah, but I kind of feel like, isn't it a little barbaric that we're I believe that, biology made us a certain way. Like, why are we deciding that here's a piece that we don't need, throw it away?
You know, I don't know.
Like, I feel like aesthetically I get it, but I feel like that, is that a good reason?
Isn't there an infection issue?
You know, there's theoretically like 1% of men that are uncircumcised will start getting fungal infections down there and will need an adult circumcision. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's not really a good reason to circumcise somebody.
Yeah.
I think it just tradition.
Like, yes, I understand. And religious tradition, you know, as well with the Brits out there. So, you know, I understand all the reasons that it's done.
Like, you know, Americans used to have slaves. They used to, like, you know, they think they should have machine guns because of tradition. Yeah. It's sort of the same thing. Tradition, I guess.
I just think in 100 years, I think nobody's going to have it done.
I'm willing to take that bet.
Okay.
Yeah, I would take that bet too.
You think in like Star Trek The Next Generation that people are still being circumcised?
That's more than 100 years. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in our sci-fi future.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there are Jewish people around, they're going to still be circumcised.
Absolutely. I guess so.
Star Trek The Next Generation is after Star Trek. That's the 24th century you're talking about.
Once you start having robot sex, do you think robots are going to be circumcised?
Oh, like, that's a good question.
The robot penis is a circumcised penis or an uncircumcised penis?
I don't think robots have penises. There's really no point.
No, there's like robot sex penis. Yeah, like...
Oh, like a sex, I mean, sex robot.
They really have penises.
Sex robot.
Like sex robots, right? Oh. But like vibrators are typically like uncircumcised penises. Even though a penis that's uncircumcised and circumcised looks mostly the same when they're erect.
Mike, I would predict that the sex robot is circumcised. I think that a robot has no need for a foreskin.
But how about 200 years from now?
My guess is...
Well, go ahead. Depends what everybody else is doing.
Why wouldn't you be able to customize your sex robot?
I think you would be.
You should be able to. I mean, I think to save money, you should have a sex robot that has interchangeable, you know, genitals.
So that's like,
my wife and I can use the same sex robot. Yeah.
Smart.
You know, interchangeable genitals and interchangeable heads.
Smart.
So, like, I don't have to have sex with a sex robot that looks like Rob Sestanino. You know?
Yeah, I guess you could.
My wife might want to.
Dr. Mike, did you get any other questions from your social media following?
Oh, you know, there was one. No, it's not really a good question.
Okay.
I think I'm good. Are we done for the day?
What's something that you've been waiting to get off your chest regarding these questions, Dr. Mike? What do you want the listeners to know?
I have nothing. I am good. I mean, I really think I'm spent. I feel like I need a cigarette here or something, right? But even though I don't smoke. But.
You talked about a lot in your last podcast appearance that you were going to be working on setting up a deal with a certain adult toy manufacturer. Did you make any headway with that?
You know, that's a great... So, I mean, there's a few things. First of all, I think I'm going to have my own sex podcast here.
Yes.
Right? Like, I mean, it's like... I think there are questions that Steven does not want to answer or conquer on this podcast that need to be conquered. And so, you know, like whether it's about snake venom or lactose intolerance or toys to help you masturbate, like I'm going to make a podcast about this stuff, I think.
Yes.
And
is there enough fodder there for every week?
I definitely don't have enough time to have a once a week podcast. If that's what you expect from me,
yes.
You will be like, you will be sadly mistaken. I also don't have a 9-inch penis. I'm not going to have a podcast every week. It's like, just set the expectations low.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
But I am not.
Okay.
But, what? I don't know which of those two things he has.
I think he has a weekly podcast.
No, I think he has a humongous
number. Oh,
really?
I didn't know. I'd never heard this.
Come on. Are you kidding?
Okay, so here, just go back to what you were saying.
When I run for office, my campaign slogan is going to be "Play with yourself, not guns."
Wow. What office? Okay. Yeah, what office
you
is that?
You got my vote, Dr. Mike. Yeah,
I'm going to take his office.
Sure.
Maybe in 10 years, you never know. No, I mean, coming for you with this you.
Well, I hope they never find this podcast, Dr. Mike.
That's right. Why you think this could be a damaging
attack ads? Yeah. Here, let's get back to wrapping this up. Let's.
This is not damaging to me.
No, like, no. Yeah, you're unfallible.
Well, I'll tell you, Rob Sestanino, that We talked about the Fleshlight on your podcast.
Yes.
And I got my own birthday. I mean, somebody sent me a birthday present.
And what did it live up to your expectations, Dr. Mike?
I have no comment. But I'll tell you that we then talked about Hot Octopus with Johnny Fairplay.
That didn't happen. That's not canon. That didn't happen on this podcast.
But somebody sent him a birthday present.
Yeah.
And he had like an unboxing video. So like,
is a Hot Octopus like a Fleshlight?
So here's the bone I have to pick.
Oh boy.
The boner I have to pick with people. Like men, male masturbation is like a common topic that people just talk about and laugh about.
Right.
But women, it's like almost taboo for women to masturbate. But like, you know, it's not talked about as much. But yet you can go into Brookstone and buy like vibrators for women. But you can't go into like regular convenience stores and buy like tools to assist men in masturbating. But
because as men, we have vivid imaginations. Any household object, Dr. Mike.
Right. I mean, if it has a hole, there's a guy that has tried to stick his dick into it. Absolutely. You know, I knew a guy, like when I was in high school, there was a guy that was like, my girlfriend won't let me have sex with her.
Wait, so was this guy? You were Dr. Mitch.
He had like underarm sex with her. He would like, I lube up her underarm.
Really?
Like, what?
And this was consensual.
Yeah, I mean, she like, you know, held her arm closed, I guess. I don't know.
Like, yeah.
Yes.
Like,
I think it was.
One this of those, look, I just want to go to sleep. Whatever you got to do.
This is what high schoolers do so the girls can still say that they're virgins. I wonder if this is something that Jessica has done. You know?
Yeah, you have to ask her.
I think if someone has sex with your underarm, you're still a virgin.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
So when do you stop being a virgin?
Well, when it's like a real orifice.
What, like is a mouth? Like if you give a blowjob, you're not a virgin anymore?
People have different definitions of when you lose your virginity, but I don't think anyone's includes the underarm.
I don't know. Dr. Mike, do you have a strong feeling on this?
What, on the definition of virginity?
Yes.
I think that if you're having vaginal or anal sex, you're not a virgin anymore.
Yeah.
I'll go out there and say that.
I hope they change it. I hope they change it. And then I can have a more respectable time that I lost my virginity.
All that underarm humping you did as a teen.
Time? Like,
yeah, I hope they change it.
You lose your virginity when you lose your virginity. There's no respectable time or not respectable time.
Okay. All right. On that note, Dr. Mike, let's start to bring this home.
Everybody deserves to be able to have sex.
Yes. Okay. Well, Dr. Mike, I'm glad that you were able to find some time to come on here and talk shop with Stephen and I as we are closing out the Love Know-It-All season, Dr. Mike.
I love the Love Know-It-Alls. You guys are great.
Yes.
You guys, I mean, it's amazing how many people actually are turning to you guys for dating advice.
I know. Yes. It's really scary. It's frightening.
Yeah, Stephen, and real quick on that note, we got an email from one of our listeners, Jen. She said, I just want to thank the Love Know-It-Alls. Thank you for putting this podcast together. I started listening in an ironic sense because you guys make me laugh. And I thought the subject matter was going to have some good bits. I was pleasantly surprised that I was able to take the advice that you and your guests were giving. You managed to make it entertaining and resourceful. She talks about how she got on OkCupid because of Steven's advice. So that's Jen. Steven, what about a dating advice ghost island? Should we then have like a ghost island where all the mistakes that people have made end up to one ghost island?
Do they then have to then other people have to make those same mistakes and try to like get success from them?
Yeah, get ghosted island, we'll call it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
I'm going to interrupt here and say that I think Stephen has given great dating advice. I think the best dating advice Stephen gave, I always used as well, which my mom gave me, which was that you ask a bunch.
Drink
just
lactose
get
free milk.
Out there. Exactly. No, she said, look, you ask out 10 hot girls. One of them says yes, and you know what? You're dating a hot girl. Just put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And I think Stephen said that on the first podcast. Like, don't be scared to ask people out. Like, ask them out. Worst that happens is they say no. But eventually, it'll be the right time, right place. Somebody you like is going to say yes, and then you're dating a good, you know, somebody. good for you.
People feel so much shame about rejection, and it's like, who cares? Like, there's no shame.
Who cares?
Someone says no.
Yeah. Who cares? Whatever. All right.
Who cares?
All right. Well, Dr. Mike, follow Dr. Mike on Twitter. You're just Mike Zahalski. That's it.
Yeah, Mike Zahalski. You know, I also said that I'm going to have my own podcast. And Rob, you said this ghost thing. One of the things I'd like to do on my podcast, Rob, is have you there and call your ex-girlfriends while you're there and ask them what you did wrong. Well, will you do that with
that'll
me?
That'll be a quick segment.
It'll be like, how was it dating Rob? Like, because how do you understand? Like, people always wonder, like, why it is that you get broken up with? Like, why are you getting broken up with? Why are you getting dumped? Was it my small penis? Was I bad in bed? Like, I think we have to tackle those things.
Yes.
And maybe you can do that on the Ghost Island version of Love Know It All.
Yes. Well, I don't think you'll be able to find anybody, Dr. Mike, for me. But maybe your different guests, you'll be able to contact their exes.
I'd be horrified if people contacted my exes.
Yeah, I think everybody would. I don't think you're alone in that.
That's what makes it so funny.
And what are you doing? Like the Jerry Springer show?
Wait, isn't that this?
No. We have a guy named Steve, but no, it's not the Jerry Springer show.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay. All yeah. right.
I mean, I think it would be so funny.
Okay. Well, all right, Dr. Mike, we got to wrap this up. Steven and I have to get ready for Survivor Know-It-Alls coming up on Wednesday. Steven, are you looking forward to getting back into the Survivor Know-It-Alls?
Wait, it's this Wednesday?
Yes.
Wow. I did not know that.
You did not know that.
I didn't know when the show premiered.
Yeah. Are you available?
Yeah, I'll clear my schedule.
You're around? It's a 2-hour show, Steven.
Oh my God. Oh, God, we're back into it again. No, like, I'm really excited for this season. I haven't been this excited for a season in a long time. I love the Ghost Island premise. I love the cast. It's going to be really good.
Okay.
Good. I just didn't know when it premiered.
Who do you think's going to win? Steven, who do you think's going to win Survivor this season?
Steven, I don't know. Do you do winner picks? No.
No, I don't like to. I don't think it's useful to do it before you see them when they get out on the island. Everything that people say about themselves and the way people act beforehand in my mind is pretty irrelevant compared to like how they actually act when the game begins. I mean, all your preseason stuff is great. Don't get me wrong.
Yes. I know you've been listening very closely. You don't even know the season starts on Wednesday.
It's fun because I do like to get a sense of the contestants' personalities, but in terms of like guessing how they're going to operate when they're starving, when they're in the stressful situation, it's like, who knows? You don't know. There's no way to tell until it happens.
God, I'm glad we cleared that up. I would have been sitting there on Wednesday night and been like, hey, are you coming on? Like, what? I didn't even know that the show's on today.
Had you not told me, there is a good chance that we would not be having a podcast on Wednesday night.
All right, well, good. Then the love
know
it all.
If he ghosts you, yes, then I'll step in.
Dr. Mike is standing by. Okay, well, good. Then the love know-it-alls was worth it just to get to this point so that Steven knew that Survivor was on the right week. It was all leading to this point. It was fate, Dr. Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, what I would say, this is a little bit of a spoiler alert that, like, you know, asked you who's going to win. Nobody thought I was going to win. And
you didn't.
I didn't.
Yes. Yeah, but nobody thought you were even going to get as far as I remember Shane Powers like was tweeting a picture of you. He's like, no way this guy is even getting close, right?
Oh, I remember that interaction.
Shane Powers.
Too.
Yeah. You know, actually, in my town, everybody had like an over under bet on how far I was going to make it.
Yeah.
And there was nobody that bet that I would make it more than 22 days.
Yeah. So that's good. Look at you, Dr. Mike. Hey, never underestimate Dr. Mike. And that was true nowhere more than in this podcast today.
Yeah. Thank guys. This was great. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Mike.
I look forward to if I'm ever invited back, I'll come.
This was great. You were fantastic. This was a lot of fun. I almost texted Rob during the show to say what a great guest you were, but then I didn't because I thought that would distract him.
I was texting Rob during the show. I was texting him question marks.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Texting me question marks. You had better text during the podcast the last time, Dr. Mike.
I did. You know what?
About sex dungeons.
I texted you guys like a picture last night and you guys didn't even respond to it.
What was the picture?
Oh, I didn't understand that. It was a tattoo.
Yeah. Did you look at the tattoo?
Yeah, it looked like a two dudes with giant wieners.
Yeah, it looked like Tony.
It looked like two guys.
It looks like two Tony. Oh, Dr. Mike, stop it. That's too much.
What did he say? What did he say?
Don't look at it, Steven.
Oh,
don't look
Jesus
at
Christ.
It.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Excuse me, please.
Yeah. The first picture basically is like a tattoo of like two naked Tonys with giant phalluses as a tattoo. And then the second one, it's that he is like, that's like a sex crime, Dr. Mike, to be even like sending those digital images.
I could probably do a whole podcast about sex crimes that I've seen.
Yeah. Okay. Let's not. See, okay, that's your podcast. Go, so, yeah. With that, thanks so much to Will from America.
Podcast should just end with you going, oh my God, what is that?
Yes. That's what we're going for here. All right. And thanks so much to Will from America, who will take us out for the final time in this season of the Love Know-It-Alls.
I get aroused every time I listen to this song.
That makes
it doesn't
me
take much. I don't think that.
The hottest guys are about to go.
Can Brett LaBelle sing this one too?
Oh, that'd be funny.
Probably.
Like they've done the deed a million times. Well, actually, they never really get laid at all. They're gonna blow you up.
See, they said they're gonna blow you, but that's not getting laid.
Away, away.
Steven and Rob, without a doubt, do stuff you can only dream about. The blow you up.
All right, Steven, so should we delete this podcast or should we still post it?
I mean, I would want to delete about two-thirds of it.